Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
Your work is going to fill a large part of your life, and the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking, and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking. Don't settle.
G'day, everyone. Welcome back to another Friday Wrap. Gosh, the whole crew is here this time, mate. I think we had missing crews for 2 weeks, but it's good to have everyone back. Jazz, John, welcome back.
How was the holiday, John?
Oh, very, very nice. Farm stay. Yeah, it was in the middle of nowhere. It was lovely.
Lived with the family or the girlfriend?
No, it was cows and, you know, chickens and stuff like that. Yeah,
John, we definitely missed you, but as you pointed out, you didn't miss too much last week with budget update. So we were originally going to give you some time to share your thoughts, but you politely declined to that degree. So we'll move on to our news this week then. So a couple of things on macro. There's basically a business condition improvements, which is related to a state detailed table. So we'll touch on that. And yesterday, I think the ABS released the latest unemployment rate for September. So we'll also touch on that as well. And there's been a lot more certainty talks around the interest rate will drop, or the cash rate will drop again in Melbourne Cup Day. So that seems to be more and more likely. So we'll have a chat about that and what the implications of that are. So that's on the macro side of things. And then we'll move into a couple of finance and property news, more related to first home buyers, loan being the highest volume so far since GFC. There's some positivity around the deferral of loan payments being reduced by almost 50%. So that's also positive. And the landlords, unfortunately, are suffering at the moment, being hit by the deepest national the drop in terms of the rental market. John and I will basically cover a bit more as we dig into that.
So let battle commence.
It'd be more than enough, don't we? So, okay, let's start off with the business conditions. How about that one, Jazz? Do you want to lead the conversation on that?
Yeah, I think the main thing to talk on this one, and guys, you can chip in. What your thoughts are, but the big theme over here in the business conditions to me was out of all the states in Australia, WA, Western Australia is clearly leading the charge over here. If you look at the business conditions for WA current, they're sitting at about 25 on the index. The change is roughly about 23. So the point over here is that the sentiment has really kicked into full gear in WA. And if you look at some of the other states, Victoria is still lagging for obvious reasons because of the lockdown. New South Wales, there is confidence change over there to positive, but still currently overall it's in negative. So, and also it ties into the commodity space. Basically, we have touched on this in the past and we had David Hall as well on our podcast from WA. But it says a lot about what's happening in WA, essentially.
In terms of business confidence, you know, I kind of agree with you that there's a mix between the states. You know, the numbers suggest that confidence is rising in New South Wales, Victoria, but obviously the big one is Western Australia, and we've talked about Western Australian property and commodities a little bit. So the numbers appear positive. The only thing I would kind of say is that this is an example of how data can kind of be contorted a little bit to paint a picture. So what it's saying is 2 months ago, confidence was down, and 1 month ago, confidence was down, but by less. And the way they've framed the data, it's like, therefore, the change in confidence is up. And it's like, well, yes, but it's still down. It's just not down as much. So, you know, business confidence is down by less every month, and that's a good thing. The takeaway is that Tasmania and Western Australia are doing really well.
Leading the charge, essentially, yeah. Isn't it? If you look at it, they're pretty much double-digit figures. In that sense, but overall it's definitely moving in the right direction. I think you guys covered it pretty much, the key points there on the on that confidence table, so it's good. I think All right. Well, shall we talk about the unemployment rate then, if that's okay? That was being released by ABS yesterday. I'll just read out a short blurb here. The unemployment rate rose in September to 6.9% as 30,000 jobs were lost nationally, with more people working fewer hours than they want to, and those on JobKeeper still not showing up in official figures. The New South Wales unemployment rate 7.2%, Victoria 6.7%, Queensland 7.7%, South Australia 7.1%, Western Australia 6.7%, Tasmania 7.6%, Northern Territory, wow, 4.8%. That's interesting. Is it because of population proportion? Yeah. I don't know Northern Territory well enough to be able to comment, but okay, NT 4.8 and ACT 3.8%. Okay, so gents, thoughts on the latest unemployment figures?
Look, I think it's in line with what everyone was expecting, except that this 6.9, again, like what you just said, David, doesn't include the real picture, which is the JobKeeper packages and all. And that has been discussed a lot in the past as well. It's just something to be watched closely more than anything else. The youth unemployment rate increased to 14.5%, which I personally think is a little bit interesting. That tells you that there's the blue collar jobs and all, or the retail jobs basically, essentially, are losing the most, especially taking into account what's happening in Victoria. I think part of that is Victoria to be the culprit.
That's why the federal budget obviously tried to incentivize employment of young people, right? By giving, what is it, $200 a week for anyone employed under 30 years of age and $100 for anyone under 35 years of age. Mm-hmm. So it's incentivizing to make sure that youth unemployment started to go down from this point onwards. So
this is one to be watched closely. But having said that, overall sentiment across the market is now changing, which is positive. So yep. I think the numbers will only start to look better, to be honest, over the next couple of months. So 2020 was a write-off. 2021, I think, will be a good year, in my opinion.
Look, I agree with most of that. I guess, we've discussed in the past that I look at unemployment and inflation numbers with an enormous amount of suspicion. So I don't necessarily believe it. And it comes back to, like, what is an employed person? What is an unemployed person? And I think in this data, if you've worked 1 hour in the month, you're considered employed. And, you know, families are going to struggle on that. So we've got an unemployment figure of 6.9%, which is ordinarily, that's okay. It's not great, but it's not terrible. But at the same time, there's incredible wealth destruction. So my takeaway is the participation rate is below 65%, and that's really low. I'm going to look at these numbers with suspicion until things like JobKeeper and JobSeeker are sort of stripped out in some way. And I think there needs to be some sort of normalization for that. And so I can't see that in the numbers. So I'm just a little bit skeptical. The other thing for me is to pick up on something Jazz said about the youth unemployment. The COVID-19 recession has affected different people differently. And in many ways, it's affected young white collar people the most. So the youth are very badly affected by this. And what does it mean for the economy? Well, we talk a lot about real estate on this show. It means that the one of the reasons why the rental market is down, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but the market for buying and selling isn't down, is because the people affected by the unemployment rate, which is typically kind of white collar young people, aren't yet buyers, but they are renters. And so those people who are really affected are hitting the rental market, but they're not hitting the seller's market. And that's one of the reasons why the property market is holding up from one perspective and not the rental perspective. So winners and losers in any recession, and young people are the losers in this one.
Yeah, which is a sad part, to be honest.
What was the participation rate last month? Was it 6.7? So it dropped by 0.1 or something?
It was just under 6. Yeah, it was the participation rate was under 65%, and the participation rate dropped by 0.1%.
All right, well, nothing else to add, then we'll move on to the next one, which is the interest rate. the cash rate potential decrease in Melbourne Cup Day call. So the cash rate, there's been more and more calls about that now. I think the punters are obviously putting their money where their mouth is on this one. but I guess, John, echoing your point before we jump on, a lot of people talk about whether it's going to happen or not, right? Now, personally, I think it might be just a matter of time. In terms of when they're really going to pull the trigger. You know, every other day we probably see on the news that RBA is going to pull that trigger in Melbourne Cup Day. Now, if they do, what's the implication of that? And if they don't, what would be the implication of that? Let's look at around the November period. You know, if they do this, then what does that mean for the Australians? And if they don't, then what does that mean for the Australians for this Christmas? I guess, yep. To a degree.
All right, so first, the prediction, I think they will cut. I think they'll cut. I think official rates are at 0.25, and thus they're saying that they'll either drop by 0.1 or go down to 0.1, which is broadly speaking the same sort of thing. So the impact is interesting, though. I hear a lot of economic pundits saying how great it is for the property market if they drop rates. My view is that the low interest rate environment is a trap. It's like checking into Hotel California. You can check in, but you can't check out. It's like there's no reverse gear on artificially low interest rates, because if you back the truck up and you start putting interest rates up, you can't get out of the straitjacket without creating a recession. So I would prefer that we didn't go down this artificially low interest rate asset price bubble environment, because I don't want to have to take even more medicine down the track. So, you know, that's kind of how I look at it. Now, what impact will it have? Look, it will be, in the short term, it'll be very, very good for asset prices, but we already kind of have an asset price bubble going on, so I don't want any more of that. But it'll be good for the real estate market, it'll be good for the share market, and it'll also mean things like the price of oil at the petrol station goes up. But I feel it's a bit like, you know, if you've got your mate at a party's drunk and you give him another beer, is he going to get extra drunk? It's going to be hard to tell. The extra beer is not going to make that much of a difference, because he's already intoxicated. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the economy at the moment. I don't know if we need another beer. I'd rather we stop spiking the punch bowl and start to you know, have our Vegemite on toast and a glass of water. But so it's going to take even more and more drugs to keep the patient high. And a little bit of extra interest rate cuts, I don't think will make much of a difference, but I suspect that there will be a perspective that it'll be a signal to the market that the RBA's got our back, go out there and spend and invest, and we'll deal with the consequences later. What do you guys think?
I mean, apart from what you've already said, John, I think, and we mentioned this in the previous podcast as well, why they're doing it. They don't want to stimulate the property market specifically, but it will obviously lead into some, it will have a little bit of effect on the property market, clearly. But the main reason is always the currency and the bank funding, which is what they're trying to achieve over here, to keep the currency intact and provide funding to the banks cheaply. But we have said that in the past as well, all three of us, many a times, that the real estate prices shooting up, good for the investors, but it's actually a bad news in this environment that we are in. It's going up for all the wrong reasons, basically, from an economic perspective. And that has been said many times, no point of repeating it.
How do you guys feel about the word stimulus being used to describe lower interest rates? Can governments, can central banks actually stimulate anything? Or are they really stealing from Peter to give to Paul, and they just make us feel like, that make us feel better?
I'll quickly add my two cents to it. It's basically, to your point, and we were discussing this before the recording as well, it's not really a stimulus. All you're doing is basically bringing the demand from the demand of the future. You're essentially sucking up all that demand, and someone will have to pay this in the future, which will be probably our kids or grandkids, whatever it is, right? So that has been said on the podcast many times as well, that it's kicking the can down the road. That's essentially what we are doing by bringing the demand forward. So all this credit that is flowing in the economy, it's great, but the music is going to stop. And when it stops, it's going to be a little bit unhealthy. And I think that's the point that, John, you were making just before, that it's a concern that you don't want that to happen, that you don't want to take that dose, essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get suspicious when anyone calls what a government or a central bank does a stimulus, because I think that these are the Orwellian euphemisms that they use to convince us of what they're about to do is essential and that we need to get behind it. So technically a government can't stimulate. So they can run a deficit, which means they either tax someone else, they have to take that money out of the economy, or they tax us in the future. So that's government. Government spending is not stimulus because they have to do equal and opposite taxation, right? The central bank can't stimulate either because they what they call stimulus, we ought to more correctly call they debase currency. So if they pump all this, if they lower interest rates, they've stimulated the economy, but they've simultaneously stolen all the money from the savers. So they've taken from savers to give to borrowers. So there's no stimulus there either. So they're just winners and losers, and I find it very pernicious. I know I just would prefer that we stop using the word "we" as in a, not this podcast. I'm happy to use it as shorthand, but you know, just push back whenever anyone says that the central bank's about to do stimulus, because they can't.
And that's a very good point. One way or the other, it's the taxpayers that are going to pay. If it's not our generation, then it will be the next generation. But the cost will have to be repaid. Yeah. It's at a simplest level, it's if you're running your household budget and if you, every month you keep going into negative, how long can you go into negative for? It's that's the easiest way to put it, basically.
You guys pretty much summed it up. It's a transfer of wealth, you know, as you said, robbing from Paul to give to Peter to a degree in a nice way, because there's no point in terms of keeping the money in a savings account. So, you know, that's why they're essentially forcing people to handle money and put money very differently. So, so net effect's probably going to be the same, but it's more of a mentality, isn't it? It's more mentality. It's government's backing us up by giving us stimulus. And that's what the media wants us to believe, to a degree.
Yeah. I wonder whether the kids, our kids, forget even the grandkids, but even our kids in future will look at property as the same way that we used to look at it as a store, as a great store of value when they are ready to enter the markets, essentially. I highly am suspicious of that. That doesn't mean that don't invest in property. We obviously all are property investors here. I think they will look at it very differently, in my opinion. They won't look at it as a store of value at all, is how I look at it.
Yeah, I think it acts as a store of value, but I know what you mean about the attractiveness of real estate. So if you think about like the choices our grandparents made, they could buy maybe three properties and pay them off and live on them. How many properties do you need to buy at a 3% yield to make real estate a viable retirement plan for you? I mean, you have to buy 15 properties. And so is it viable? I mean, that's a long journey to say I'm going to need 15 properties in Sydney or Melbourne and retire off those. You go, well, good luck living to 300 to achieve those goals. So I know what you mean. It's an interesting conundrum. I still think real estate, given its tangible nature, is a store of wealth, but maybe not as useful in terms of retirement. But I need to ponder that.
What else have we got? Okay, so let's move on to a bit more about finance news then. So what we have is we've got the loans to first home buyers reaching highest levels since GFC. So I think that's echoing a lot of what we've been saying for last couple of months. We're seeing a lot of first home buyer activities in the market at the moment, given where the incentives are all in the first home buyers market area, you know, with all the with all the first home loan deposit schemes and all that kind of stuff. It's not surprising. To actual some figures, let's have a look. More than 12,000 first home buyers settled home loans in August, up from 10,451, so it's about 10,500 in July, and 8,961 in August 2019. That is a lot of first home buyers. That's an increment of what, about 10% from July, and a good, 20-30%. So yeah, it's definitely time, a good time for first home buyers in the current market. And that's why we're, you know, I think last week we also talked about the graph, Jazz. We've seen the first home buyer graph trending up in terms of the loans, and also the investor activity started to trend up as well, but it's still kind of towards negative at the moment. So
it seems like the investor activity is still very low, especially with the chart that we discussed last week was telling us that picture. But first home buyers, they're in full strength back in the market. John?
Yeah, from my perspective, look, nothing to add to the data. I think that was all right. What I'm seeing in my business is that the first home buyers are definitely coming back. The typically young first-time investors actually looking for units, two-bedroom units, and they see there's a place in the market for that sort of thing. So I definitely see young investors coming in. I don't know if they're coming in enough numbers to really move the market, so maybe we'll see that in a couple of months, but I can definitely see young first-home buyers / first-home investors coming in, trying to scoop up units. Under the belief that they're undervalued, we'll see if that plays out over the next couple of years.
Do you think they are actually undervalued, the units?
Well, it depends. So I think new and off the plan are still probably expensive. I wouldn't really go there. If you're looking at a 1960s or 1970s two-bedroom walk-up, I think that they're not overvalued. But you'll have you probably won't see any particular growth in the next 12 months. But once the immigration spigots come back and you get students coming back and people start working in the CBDs again, you probably see that as a good investment. What I would say about older style units is there probably isn't any downside. It's hard to know when the upside will come though. But new units, that's certainly continues to be dangerous.
I'm assuming, David, you're seeing the same thing in the mortgage numbers, obviously.
It's a lot of pre-approvals, that's for sure, yeah, for first-time buyers. Yeah, there's still some investor activity because my client base is primarily investors anyway, so they are looking at investing, not necessarily in Sydney and Melbourne market in the current environment, but probably looking at Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth, Tasmania to that degree. So, yeah, spreading across the country, but yeah, definitely, and some refinancings as well, of course. That's okay. But the biggest portion so far, definitely first-time buyers, that's for sure. So it's in line with what everyone's seeing right now. So this is a bit of positive news. So almost half of deferred loans have now resumed payment. This is according to Australian Banking Association. Okay, so ABA has reported that 6 months after the introduction of deferrals, repayments have resumed on almost half of all deferred loans. So we've got about 500,000 mortgages and more than, so $500,000 residential, so 500,000 residential mortgages and more than 200,000 small business loans had paused payments during that period. Mm-hmm. However, as of last week, the number of deferred mortgages had dropped to 270,000. Okay, so 500 down from 500,000 to 270, so almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that means the repayments have resumed for about 224,000 loans. And so that's based on the data collected by ABA from seven of the largest banks in Australia. So it's a good representation of where we are at the moment with loan referrals. So people are starting to come back when they can make the repayments. I think that's definitely a good sign.
So that's really a positive news, but I think the data that will be lagging is how many of these, and hopefully not a lot, will actually, if they default, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that's still yet to see. But I think Australians are known for their resilience in terms of they'll do whatever they need to keep their asset to a degree as well, right? Whether that's working second job, whether that's what, tightening their belt, we'll see. Okay, then let's move a bit on to property side of things then. I think... There's an article from Property Observer which talks about landlord hit by deepest national unit rental falls in 16 years. That's according to Domain. Okay, so the headline here says, according to a report nationally and across most capital cities, weekly rents for houses were up over the quarter. However, at a regional level, we saw sharp declines in inner city areas across the near Melbourne, with some regions dropping by up to $55 a week. Ouch.
Well, the devil's in the detail, and it says in that article that it's all about the units. So house rents are kind of, they're up, even in Sydney and Melbourne, but units are down. And when you sort of break it down, you say, well, okay, there are no students coming out, and, you know, young people are losing their jobs and so on. So it's all about units, not houses. And the unit rents are 4.2% lower than they were in March, which is not nothing for such a short period of time. I guess my key observation would be that, you know, when everyone was expecting to see blood on the street in the real estate market, and it didn't quite happen. There are two parts to the real estate market. There's the buyer's market and the renter's market, and all the pain is being felt by landlords. There's an article in The Australian today by Robert Gottliebson, the economist, and he does a really interesting article saying how we villainize landlords, and he's really talking about commercial properties like people who own cafes and stuff like that. But he said, you know, we always think of landlords like Westfield and all these big companies, but actually most landlords are mum and dad investors, and we've villainized them. And he sort of ends the article by talking about these mum and dad investors who have had to give these rent forgiveness periods as the forgotten people, because these mum and dad landlords can't compete with these mandates from the state and federal governments. I thought it was an interesting article. Rents are where the pain is. Residential real estate, you'll take a haircut on your rent, but you'll still get it leased, and you can probably keep rolling on and put one foot after the next.
All these things make you think more what the future is like. I'm just thinking what 10 years from now or 20 years from now is going to look like. When you look at all the yields and everything, the prices shoots up again, the yields are going to drop even further.
Just taking a big step back, in 1982, the bond market bottomed, and we've been in a bull market in the bond market since 1982, which is 40 years, right, or 39 years. Now, the inverse of the bond market is the interest rate, which means we've had declining interest rates for 40 years. So when we think about how's real estate performed over the last 40 years, it's performed really, really well because we've been in the biggest bond market boom in history, and we've had falling interest rates for almost all of that period. What happens when that big interest rate cycle changes and we go into a period where interest rates have to go up for the next 40, 50 years? What happens to real estate? My personal view is real estate's always good to own, but there are bigger cycles, and we tend to look through the keyhole at, you know, what's happened for the last, you know, 1 to 5 years, when we probably should be looking at what happened over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, we're talking about, I guess, what John, to John's point, if you're looking at a 10-year, 20-year horizon, you would look back 2020 as a little bit of blip. But ultimately, you know, when everyone is back on their feet, employment's back on track again, people will be able to afford paying normality. So, John, I think you want to touch on a bit about property update for us?
Look, I can give you the Reader's Digest version, guys, but last week the auction clearance rates were really positive. You know, we had a bet a couple of months ago that real estate was going to bottom in about September, October. I think that's certainly what's happening. So for Sydney, let's start with Sydney. They had a big increase in the number of auctions, nearly 720, which was about 13% more properties were sold than this time last year. And the auction clearance rates were over 70%. What that says is that we're in a seller's market, and we just don't have the data yet for price increases, but it probably means that prices are increasing. Melbourne's kind of bumbling. It's hard to make any sense out of Melbourne, so we might park it, but it wasn't so bad. The clearance rates were 62%. Brisbane, 60%, and an increase in auctions. Brisbane's not really the home of the auction, but some encouraging numbers there. Adelaide at nearly 90% and Canberra at 84% clearance. So it would suggest, and I think in about two, three weeks, we'll be talking about whether prices are going up or down. And my guess, based on these numbers that are fairly strong, is we'll be talking about the start of a new bull market in real estate.
Bulls are back.
Bulls are back.
Any more bets on presidential election?
Yeah.
According to Rupert Murdoch, it's Joe Biden who's going to win the election?
I still think Trump will win, and I know that every poll says he's not going to win. Couple of reasons. I think elections are won via enthusiasm. You think of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton versus Bush Senior. I think elections are won via enthusiasm. And if you look at Biden's audience, there's, honestly, the events are empty, whereas Trump still generates excitement. There's another reason. If you look into the way they do the polling, they're assuming, the most polls assume that Trump will only get about 74 to 75% of Republican votes. Now, he got about 88% last time, and he will probably get even more this time. So they're assuming he loses the base. And that hasn't happened in the last 100 years. So there's never been a time when an incumbent has got 75% of his own party. So if you then normalise and say, well, actually, he probably gets 90% of the Republican vote, it's a lot more even. I still think he wins, but, I mean, I don't know. What's happening at the moment is very interesting, too, about releasing Biden, Hunter Biden scandalous reports and Twitter and Twitter and Facebook censoring it too. That's interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I still think that it will be Trump that will win the election. But when likes of Rupert Murdoch come out and say it's Joe Biden, makes you think a little bit. The results probably won't come out till end of November, December.
Wow. Well, my wife keeps saying, just put a bet, go to these betting websites and make a bet. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not my style. She's encouraging me to gamble. This is terrible. But children, don't gamble. Be in school. Don't do drugs.
You know what's the interesting piece of news that was out this week, I think, was China has been trialing their new payment system, which is a digital currency, and they have airdropped it to I don't know how many million people, and there's a possibility that it will be backed by gold. And
yeah, I get nervous that governments are so keen on digital currencies. It makes me a little bit nervous. Here's a scandalous prediction. Here's what I've heard. Digital currencies tie into universal basic income, and the way they'll stimulate the economy in the future is everyone gets some digital currency, but the digital currency expires if they don't spend it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't save the money, and that's how they stimulate consumption.
And guess why they're doing it? Because the printers can't cope up with that much money printing. So the only other way you can do that UBI is essentially dropping it into the wallets directly and Fed taking on the full control by removing the middle banks, basically.
Yep.
Much easier with zeros and ones rather than having to print physical mediums.
To the listeners, happy Friday. Stay safe. And we'll be back next week covering some more fun stuff of what's happening in the markets. Till then, see ya.